I'm Brandi Cruz, coming up today on Undivided. It took 3 years, but we have finally prevailed in our public records lawsuit against the city of Seattle. Plus, Governor Ferguson ignores the obvious harm of his tax policies. And example 9,457, why Democrats are master indoctrinators. That and much more coming up today on Undivided. Remember, you can support our show for just $5 a month by signing up at undividedpod.com. That's undividedpod.com. Click on the banner that says support the show. Hello, hello, friends, and welcome to Undivided. Thank you for being here. Thank you so much for your commitment to giving Common Sense a comeback. Man, I do miss you guys over the weekend. I do miss us all getting together and talking smack about all the horrible politics happening in our country. But we'll start on a positive note today. I got a great phone call to start my day from our friends at the Citizen Action Defense Fund. It has taken nearly 3 years, but we have finally prevailed in our public records lawsuit against the city of Seattle. I know this has been so long, some of you might need a refresher on where we are. So this ruling came down this morning, a unanimous ruling from the Washington State Court of Appeals, finding that undisputed facts established that the city of Seattle's second installment estimate was unreasonable and that the city failed to handle the request with the reasonable diligence as a matter of law. So let's give you the background to all of this, and I'll talk about sort of where this goes from here and why this is relevant to a wider audience. So back in 2023, in June, the city of Seattle and the Seattle City Council were about to take a vote on a very important drug ordinance, and it would have allowed the city and police to take a heavier hand with some of the open-air substance abuse that has rendered downtown Seattle a hellhole. And the day before the vote, there was some vote counting going on, and advocates of this policy believed that they had enough votes for it to pass. And then the vote happens, and the city councilman for downtown, the most important area, right, to deal with substance abuse, Andrew Lewis, all of a sudden changes his vote at the last minute.
I came out here on the dais today fully prepared to vote for this measure, but with the ending of community court without any additional process, I just can't do it today. I just can't.
So that sounded ridiculous, and it sounded so staged and overly dramatic. And so my journalistic spidey senses were like, something's up here. How is it he's a yes yesterday and he's a no today? And so I immediately filed a public records request. Again, this is June of 2023, for his emails, for his text messages, for his phone calls, voicemails, whatever it is, to try to see if someone got to him. Did some far left organization get to him? Did he get threatened with something? What is it? So as you recall, we're waiting for this records request to come back. And the city of Seattle tells us, hey, we'll have your first installment the day after the August primary election. And Andrew Lewis was on the ballot for re-election. I thought, well, that's awful suspicious. But we went forward. We ended up getting an installment of records a couple days after the primary election. And then they say, hey, we'll have your second installment a couple days after the November general election. And I'm like, you have to be kidding me. Just absolutely insane. And so it really felt a lot like, to me, like they were withholding records that might implicate Andrew Lewis in something. I mean, that's what it seemed like until after the election. And so at that time, we realized that there's enough there to want to get to the bottom of this and do some depositions. And with help from our friends at the Citizen Action Defense Fund, we filed a public records lawsuit against the city of Seattle. Now, a lower court in King County ruled against us early last year in 2025. We appealed to the State Court of Appeals. They heard our arguments in mid-November of last year, and this morning they came out with this unanimous ruling. Now, to be fair, they did have kind of a split decision in the sense that they said that they feel like the city properly handled the first installment of our request. But then they felt like the city did not properly account for why it took so long and why they had to delay our second installment until after the November election. So part of this ruling from the State Court of Appeals, again, unanimous, saying the city's inadequate allocation of resources, lack of priorities, and organizational obstacles is not a defense for its failure to diligently assist with record requests. One of the things that came up in depositions is that the individual doing the public records had gone on a leave And the city had just this open vacancy in the public records department where they just weren't filling one of these positions. And so that led to the delay in our request. It says, thus, the city has failed to meet its burden to show that it acted with reasonable diligence in producing the second installment of records responsive to Undivided Media's request. We therefore hold that no reasonable person could find on this record that the city provided the fullest assistance to Undivided Media during the time period that it waited for the second records installment as required by the Public Records Act. Accordingly, Undivided Media is entitled to partial summary judgment as a matter of law. So what happens here? So basically what the State Court of Appeals is saying is that when it comes to the second installment, the city failed to meet its obligations under the Public Records Act and unduly delayed the release of these documents, which we'll never really know what might have been contained within the entirety of those documents, because Andrew Lewis lost the election. He ended up, you know, not being a city council member anymore at the time when we would have followed up. And so we wouldn't have been able to access his personal cell phone and all of these things. So what will happen is a lower court will have to determine damages, if any, and then they'll have to determine attorney's fees to reimburse the Citizen Action Defense Fund, which has put in countless hours. Our attorney Jackson Maynard, at no cost to us, just generous donors to the Citizen Action Defense Fund, helped to support its work. So they'll be able to recoup some of the many, many man hours that they put into this. The Citizen Action Defense Fund, in a statement this morning, saying this is a win for transparency and government accountability, both of which are vital to ensure public trust in state agencies. The Public Records Act is an important tool that exists to ensure that the people have the knowledge they need about the government that works for them. And that's really what this is about. This is a transparency lawsuit. And, you know, the city could be really petty and say they want to draw this out even further and appeal this to the state Supreme Court. I mean, I'm laughing because that would seem like just the silliest thing to do, because they've already spent so much money, of taxpayer money, fighting against this when I felt like this was so cut and dry from the beginning. And frankly, the city of Seattle in recent years has had a lot of issues and lawsuits related to its mishandling of public records requests. I mean, I think the most obvious is what happened during Chaz Chop, the takeover of six square blocks of Seattle, where all of a sudden, out of nowhere, poof, the mayor's text messages are missing, the police chief's text messages are missing, anyone in high command at the fire department and the police department, their text messages for that period of time are just missing, vanished. And so there was already a lot of distrust with the city of Seattle for how it managed and handled public records. Recently, the city of Seattle settled on a case with the Seattle brought by the Seattle Times that was actually very similar to ours. They didn't fight the Seattle Times as aggressively on it. So I have to wonder how much my political leanings really factored into how the city of Seattle, how aggressively they chose to pursue this case. So my hope is that we can go back, we can reach a reasonable settlement that covers our attorney's expenses. And yes, some damages, you know, it's taxpayer funds, so I'm not looking for some gigantic settlement. But the monetary penalty in the Public Records Act exists to change behavior, hopefully. But I think, you know, the current mayor wasn't there when this happened. The current city attorney, I mean, to be fair to them, was not in office when this violation of the Public Records Act happened. And so I can't blame either of them for what transpired. But, you know, they get to dictate how this case moves forward and whether they agree to a reasonable settlement. And I hope ultimately change behavior, right? And say, hey, we've had a lot of lawsuits against us where we have not prevailed when it comes to the Public Records Act. So we need to get our you-know-what together, and we need to make sure that we're responding to these in a timely manner. And we're abiding by the spirit of the Public Records Act. The PRA is such a valuable tool. And it's not just a valuable tool for journalists and the media. It is a valuable tool for citizens. Anyone can utilize the Public Records Act to get documentation that helps shed light on what the government is doing. And so honoring that act is very important. Violating it is very serious. And we're glad that the State Court of Appeals found on our behalf in this issue 3 years later. Took quite a while. I was like, got that. I'm like, what is Jackson Maynard calling about? I wonder, because Citizen Action Defense Fund has also been representing us in our ongoing press pass ordeal. All right, let's switch over to speaking of government and what the government is doing. So there continues to be a ton of fallout as it pertains to the income tax on millionaires passed by Democrats in Olympia. In fact, today, Bob Ferguson's supposed to be meeting with the commissioner of the NBA today. And I have to believe that the NBA commissioner, Adam Silver, is going to bring up concerns about the millionaire's tax and what it might mean for recruiting potential superstars to come back and play on the Sonics. Because he said in there was an internal briefing that the governor was given that Ari Hoffman got his hands on that said that Adam Silver of the NBA was concerned about the impact the millionaire's tax could have on getting the Sonics back to Seattle and making sure it's a thriving, successful team. So I don't know. I mean, the governor has not signed the income tax yet. No, he doesn't have to. He can just wait and it'll just go into law as long as he doesn't veto it. But given how proud he is of this thing, you would think that he wants to have a big old bill signing. At least to my knowledge, I haven't heard, Nicole, of you of a date. No, I haven't heard of a date or a bill signing. But you would imagine he'd wants to have a big old bill signing and sign it and be very proud of it. But the truth is, the state is a laughingstock right now. I mean, Glenn Beck, who you might not know, but Glenn Beck is from Mount Vernon, I think. So he's from Washington State. And he was just eviscerating Seattle and Washington State and this new policy on his show.
More than a quarter of all of the office space all across the city is vacant. Entire buildings are dark at noon. Elevators that carried thousands of engineers and lawyers and designers and now move janitors and security guards through hollow floors where the lights never come on. This is New Orleans without the hurricane. It's not war damage. This is policy that is doing this. And the response from the city leadership shows something that is far more than incompetence. It is intentional destruction.
And gosh, I don't want to believe that. But how do you not at this point with what's happened over the last 10 years and all these warnings about, hey, if you do this, this is the outcome. They just ignore it. And then that's the outcome. And you just think, at what point do they start listening to these people who've been warning them of consequences? They've just been ignoring it. And as Glenn Beck points out, you don't have to be a rocket scientist to understand why Seattle and Washington State are in such a state of decline.
A regulatory climate where starting, running, or expanding a business requires navigating a maze of taxes and mandates. You feel like a criminal if you're going to run a business. You know the city is against you and the state is against you. Who says, you know what, I think we're going to move our company to Seattle? Capital does not behave that way. Entrepreneurs do not behave that way. Investors don't behave that way. And when policymakers, who are just dumb as a box of rocks, assume they do, entire economies fall. First the companies leave, then the jobs, then the tax base, and finally the property values.
Yeah, and so ultimately the impacts, even if they don't, I mean, they are going to make it an income tax on everyone. I mean, that's not even a debate at this point. Of course, that's what they're going to do. It's what they've always wanted to do. But as he points out there, you know, even if it remains a tax on millionaires, an income tax on millionaires, as they flee, property values are going to absolutely plummet. So all that equity, you're like, wow, what a great investment I made in my home. Kiss your equity goodbye. So the question is Governor Ferguson, who I believe is an intelligent man, is he taking any of this to heart? Is he seeing headline after headline, business owner after business owner, entrepreneur and innovators? Is he seeing what they're saying and taking it to heart? Is it possible that he could say, you know what, I changed my mind, I'm going to veto this thing? Our friend Jonathan Cho caught up with him at an unrelated bill signing and asked about all of this.
Governor, many affluent people have already started exiting Washington, including Starbucks CEO Howard Schultz, Nick Hanauer. And how do you stay competitive? What is your plan to keep these people in Washington and attract more talent?
Yeah, I think from a state, we need to make sure we're thoughtful on what our tax burden is. I'm pleased that the legislature rolled back some significant taxes that were raised last year and rolled those back, like the estate tax, for example, and others. I'm pleased that the millionaire's tax will be the largest tax break for small business owners in state history, truly eliminating the B&O tax for many small business owners, thousands and thousands of them. So I think your question is a fair one. I think we as a state and legislators and as a governor need to make sure that the totality of our taxes are done in a thoughtful way that do not put us at a competitive disadvantage. And so we'll obviously be monitoring all of our taxes closely. I think that's why you saw the legislature step up and roll back a couple from last session, because there was more than a sense, there was the reality of, hey, this was harming folks in a way that I think was not intended. And so I appreciate the recognition, hey, we made a mistake on that and we need to roll that back. So it's the same with any tax, millionaire's tax, no different than anything else.
Yeah, it is. Millionaire's tax is a lot different than a lot of other things, given how it's structured and the impact it could have to our bottom line, our economy, and all these things. But he, in that, and that was just word soup of like a non-answer to say he supports it still. But, you know, he mentions a few things there. Oh, they rolled back, you know, some of the taxes passed last session. You passed those taxes. It wasn't like this amorphous blob that did it without your permission. You could have vetoed the increase in the estate tax. You chose not to. You passed the largest package of tax increases in state history last year, the majority of that on the backs of businesses. And now you want to brag this year? Oh, I'm giving the largest tax break in state history to businesses on B&O. Just last year, you passed the largest tax increase in state history to businesses on B&O. So he wants like this congratulations for undoing like a tiny little part of what he himself did last year. How is this possible? And I do believe he's smart. Which is why I hate to go into this trap of like they're doing it intentionally, because why would they want to intentionally ruin our state's economy unless they just want to create a welfare state where basically everyone is so dependent on the government, whatever it is. But, you know, a lot of this, and I say it all the time, but I'm going to continue to say it because it's true. It's the media's fault. It is 98% the media's fault. Because the media could call them out every step of the way, but too often, even when the media starts being aggressive in the way they cover something, it's way, way too late. I mean, the Seattle Times, prime example, Seattle Times' biggest example. So they have an op-ed in the paper over the weekend. Washington has a jobs crisis. Why won't our leaders say it? Well, gosh, maybe because your reporters aren't forcing them to say it. Maybe it's because your reporters aren't even acknowledging that there's a crisis until the crisis is so deep we can't even get out of it. And maybe it's because you, on the editorial board, and the guy who wrote this, Alex Fryer, who I've known Alex Fryer for a long time, he's worked in comms, political comms circles. This is his specific piece, but he's a member of the Seattle Times editorial board. And what has the Seattle Times editorial board done? They've endorsed every single one of these MFers. They endorsed Bob Ferguson repeatedly. Even though when they endorsed him for governor in 2024, they were basically like, we don't love it, but we kind of have to do it, right? Because they're not going to endorse the Republican. And they've endorsed virtually every single one of the co-sponsors of the income tax on millionaires. So they don't want to take any responsibility. So when the headline, when it says, WAH has a jobs crisis, why won't our leaders say it? Why don't you make them say it? That's literally your job. And then in this opinion piece, it's not even like it focuses on the exact policies that have killed jobs. It's not, they don't even acknowledge like, hey, we endorse these people who are now passing job-killing policies. No, here's the fix floated in this op-ed. How about someone in political leadership steps up to the microphone and says simply, we want businesses to come here. We want them to pay their employees a lot of money. We know every state and region is in competition for good jobs and we want to win. So that's what he wants is, why don't we just admit we're in a jobs crisis? We're way past that, buddy. It says, it's been a long while since we've had to work at economic development, a phrase seemingly created to make eyes glaze over. So let's start with something simple, a sentiment, a value statement, something from our elected leaders along the lines of, quote, we want businesses here to succeed. We want people to have great jobs. We will do everything to make that happen. There, is that so hard? So this whole opinion piece in the Times is like, can you guys just like maybe say the right thing? Like somebody step up to a microphone and say, yeah, we want jobs here. I don't give an SHIT what they say. I care what they do. And Bob Ferguson, when he was running for governor in the campaign where you and your editorial board and your paper endorsed him, he was saying that he was going to be a fiscal hawk. The taxes were too high. That he cared about jobs and good-paying jobs for the citizens of Washington State. And then he got the job that you endorsed him for, and he did the exact opposite. So Seattle Times, why don't you say something? Why don't you say, we made a mistake? Why don't you say, we rescind our endorsement of Bob Ferguson? Why don't you say, he wasn't worthy of the job of governor, and we were wrong? So let's start with you acknowledging a little, what do you call it? A sentiment, a value statement. Why don't you start Seattle Times with a value statement? Because it is increasingly hard to figure out where your values as a newspaper are and where your values as an editorial board are, because you are all over the map and you have done more to put, what is it, a job, to contribute to the jobs crisis in Seattle than Governor Ferguson has. Oh, I mean that. The Seattle Times has done more to contribute to the jobs crisis in Seattle that Governor Ferguson has. Just insane. All right, coming up next, some really horrible news that came out over the weekend. One of the most disturbing crimes ever committed in the city of Seattle, and the perpetrator is not going to face consequences for it. First, I've been telling you guys for years now about First Mark Insurance, our wonderful show sponsors, longtime sponsors of our friend Dory Monson's show. And so that's why I knew right away that they'd just be a perfect fit for our show and for me and my family. Mike and I use First Mark Insurance for our insurance needs, and I also use them for Undivided. And one of the great things about having First Mark do my business insurance is Dave Taylor at First Mark. I mean, he owns a local business, First Mark, and he knows exactly the challenges that Washington business owners are facing.
We're seeing the impact of just increased cost on businesses, mm-hmm. like their increased cost for their, you know, their workers' comp, the L&I stuff, all the stuff they have to go through to maintain their business.
Yeah.
And then insurance, it just is one of those items that's increasing right along with it. The property values, you know, and rates for property insurance are going up. So yeah, so it's tough on business owners for sure.
Yeah, and so they have that in mind. They know it's tough for us too as business owners. So we're going to make sure we do everything we can for small businesses to be able to cut down on their costs. And they got so creative for me. I mean, I run a kind of a weird business, like a small podcast and all this stuff. And I needed insurance that as First Mark, they'd never even gotten anyone before. And they ended up finding it for me. So they're just literally the best. We love First Mark for personal or for business insurance. Take the First Mark challenge, firstmarkinsurance.com. firstmarkinsurance.com. The very best part is they work for you, not the insurance companies. So they always have your best interest in mind. All right. This is a really tough story to ever even talk about. So you guys will remember Ina Kwan. So Ina Kwan was 34 years old, pregnant. Her and her husband were in their Tesla. They were heading to the Japanese restaurant that they own in downtown Seattle. They're at a stoplight. And this guy, 30 years old at the time, Cordell Goosby, using a stolen gun, just unloaded into their vehicle. And for no reason, this guy had a record in Illinois. He's just one of these disturbed people on the streets of Seattle who hadn't been dealt with. Ends up killing Ina Kwan, killing her unborn child, seriously wounding her husband. So this case has been playing out in the background, and it came out over the weekend that the suspect in this case, again, Cordell Goosby, has been ruled not guilty by reason of mental insanity. So this is from the King County Prosecuting Attorney's Office. Because the expert for the defense and the impartial expert for the prosecution came to the same conclusion that Mr. Goosby was insane at the time of the shooting, prosecutors agreed to the not guilty by reason of insanity plea. So, and look, this is part of our criminal justice system, for better or worse. And I think at the time, you know, who does that? I mean, who does that besides maybe somebody who's criminally, mentally insane? They went on to say, this does not mean that Mr. Goosby will be released to the streets. Not now, not a week from now, or even in the immediate future. Mr. Goosby admits that he committed the crimes and agrees to be committed to a state psychiatric hospital, such as Western State. They went on to say in this statement, there are individuals who have been found to be not guilty by reason of insanity for serious Class A felonies, including homicides that occurred as far back as the 1970s, who remain committed to a state mental institution. And look, I mean, I think anyone who commits a crime like that, I'm not privy to the questions that were asked and the evaluations or whatever it is. But you've got a case where the defense and the prosecution, their independent experts, both agreed that he was insane at the time that he committed this offense. I tend to think, just with common sense, that you have to be insane to commit a crime like that, to just out of the blue, car that's done, people have done nothing to you, unload your stolen weapon into the vehicle. Not for a robbery, not for anything else, just to hurt people. I think my concern is, of course, that this means that there could be a period in time where he's out on the streets again. And I mean, he could be committed to somewhere like Western State, which, how many issues have we had with Western State Hospital? There have been escapes from Western State Hospital. And also, it's the Department of Social and Health Services that's essentially going to be responsible for monitoring his mental health and whether it improves over time. I don't trust the Department of Social and Health Services at all. It's a failed agency. And so I don't trust that he's going to be confined to a psychiatric institution for a long period of time. Totally lost trust in that entire system. And is he going to get the kind of help that he really needs in order to get better? I mean, is he able to get better? So it's just a heartbreaking thing, I think, for the whole community and for Ina Kwan and her family. I mean, it was one of the most horrific crimes I think Seattle really had ever seen. But also, it is indicative of this wider problem that the city of Seattle is dealing with, an unchecked mental health crisis, an unchecked substance abuse crisis. You've got people, you go to downtown Seattle in certain areas and seeing someone wandering around, screaming at random people, screaming at the air, screaming at the wind, you know, holding some sort of weapon. It is not an unusual sight. One of the reasons I'm so concerned about the World Cup coming here in June. And the inability of the socialist mayor to really lean into public safety. It's like, people from all over the world here, I'm not confident that something horrible like that won't happen. And I'll say, I don't know if I should even say this, Nicole. We were at a, was that Friday, Thursday? An event last week after the show for the Seattle Police Foundation. And we love the Seattle Police Foundation. We'll support them in anything they do. It's a nonprofit that kind of works to help. Like if there's funding that the Seattle Police Department doesn't have, through taxpayer funds. They come in and help fill the gap for things that they might need, et cetera. And we're there, it's in downtown Seattle, and Katie Wilson came. I mean, she came at the very end, which I was sort of like, it was this, it's a wonderful award ceremony where they play this heroic video of things that officers have done, and they get awards for their service and for some of the heroic actions they take in the field. And I really wish that Katie Wilson had been there to see some of that video and just like how heart-stopping it is. It's just insane. But she came like at the very, very end. And part of me was like, ew, she shouldn't be here. Like, she doesn't deserve to be here. The past statement she's made about the police and supporting the defunding police movement. And then I'm like, okay, but would I rather her be here, right? Would I rather her be here to see the kind of stuff that these officers deal with day in and day out? And will that change her mentality? I don't know the answer to that. I mean, one of the awards she was there for was this story about this guy, and they play before they hand out the awards, you know, the body camera footage and the 911 calls and all of this stuff. And it was this guy who was clearly in some sort of state of mental distress, but he was hurting his significant other, and then he ended up shooting her and shooting at officers who were trying to come save her. And it was just this crazy situation. And that's the kind of stuff that Seattle Mayor Katie Wilson needs to see. That's happening on a daily basis. It needs to understand the very difficult, complex public safety crisis that we have. Like, yeah, we get gang shootings in the South End. We have a lot of property crime going on where people are trying to fund their drug habits or whatever it is. But the real complicated stuff is where you get into this space of mental illness, where you get into a space of you have people who have been contacted by police dozens and dozens and dozens of times. And then it gets in, there's a revolving door, and then it gets to the point where they kill someone and there's no going back. That is the most challenging public safety crisis that we have in the city of Seattle and across Washington state, is what to do with the criminally, mentally insane. And so for Mr. Goosby, he will head off to a mental institution. I hope he gets the help he needs, and I hope that he is there for the rest of his life. All right, coming up next in our segment, Unbelievable, the depths that Democrats will go to. They are strategic. They are strategic, and they are very good at indoctrinating youth. First, could the future of AI impact your retirement portfolio? If you've been thinking about that, tech layoffs, what does that mean for the broader economy and the strength of the economy? And also, I'll add into all of this, what's happening in Iran and what's happening with oil prices. So if you're concerned about it, join Bulwark Capital's Zach Abraham for his free live webinar, April 2nd at 3:30 p.m. Pacific. You can sign up right now, totally free. They're going to be talking about AI, crypto, tech, what's going on in Iran, and the real fundamentals of value investing, plus they'll do a full reveal of how Bulwark is focused on risk management, always looking for opportunities to lower risk, lower cost, give your retirement as much upside as possible. So join Zach's Cutting Through the Market Noise webinar coming up on April 2nd, 3:30 p.m. Pacific time. It's totally free to sign up at knowyourriskpodcast.com. You can also schedule your free Know Your Risk portfolio review and subscribe to Zach's daily market recap at knowyourriskpodcast.com. And Zach was on vacation last week, but he'll be back with me this week for a new episode of Swamp Watch. And I know we'll be talking about everything going on with the income tax and where oil prices are. $6. And let me look really quick. On the way in, I took a picture. You can come back to me, Nicole. I want to complain about gas prices. $6.69 for diesel at the place down the street.
Oh, I saw the diesel prices.
Yeah, and $5.39 for regular.
Okay.
And look, yes, look at me. Yes, Some of that is Iran. Yes, it's okay for us to acknowledge that. Even the vice president said, yeah, what we're doing in Iran is going to hurt at the pump for a while. A little honesty. But of course, the bigger problem is the taxes. That's why Washington State, although everywhere is high right now, we're so much higher because of the taxes and the carbon fees and all of those things. But all that to say that Zach's going to be talking about what's happening in Iran and how it could impact your retirement portfolio during his webinar on April 2nd. KnowYourRiskPodcast.com. All right, with that, let's get, do we have a double dose of unbelievable today? I think we do. Let's get to our first edition of Unbelievable. Oh my gosh. I mean, Democrats, I mentioned the other day on the show in our state and in a lot of these deep blue states like West Coast states, they are playing 4D chess. They've got all of the pieces out there doing double duty. And I mean, this is why it's so hard to overcome those majorities and so hard to overcome this trajectory in Washington state of it just getting bluer and bluer and bluer in terms of like the outcome of elections. So, I mean, they start them young. We already know they're indoctrinating kids in schools and their radical gender ideology and all this stuff. But now they have them today at Mount Vernon High School competing in a protest sign making contest. You guys, I kid you not. We were sent this by someone who said these flyers were all up in the hallways last week at Mount Vernon High School. It says, protest sign making event and contest after school in the cafeteria, Monday, March 23rd. That's today. So right after school, 2:30 until 3:35. And it is being done in collaboration with the Skagit County Democratic Party and Skagit Indivisible. So it says it's being hosted by the high school Democrats, which if they were just doing it, I'm not sure I'd be as bothered by it if it was like strictly a student club event. But it's being funded, pizza is being provided by the Skagit County Democratic Party. And then Indivisible, which is this far left group of activists that are responsible for all these like No Kings protests all across the country. So what kind of signs do you think they're going to be making? Probably No Kings. Isn't there a No Kings protest coming up? I guarantee they're going to be making signs, anti-Trump signs for a No Kings protest. And First Amendment, that's great. Love it. First Amendment, do whatever you want. If you're a kid and your parents want you to go to a No Kings protest, by all means, I don't care. That's bad parenting in my opinion. However, you can go anyway. But this is, they were talking about this on the morning announcements last week.
Morning announcements, just letting you know there's going to be a protest sign making contest in the cafeteria. You can write an anti-Trump.
I mean, that's crazy. That was my best
sign making announcement.
So to me, it crosses a boundary. Again, just the student club wants to do it. I don't really have an issue with that. And school premises can be used for all sorts of political activity as long as the space is booked and it's before or after school hours. But the state, the Democratic Party coming in there, offering some pizza, Skagit Indivisible helping them figure out what kind of signs to make. And then they're providing prizes. Oh, prizes for the best sign. I guarantee the best sign is going to be some sort of like anti-Trump or Trump hanging from a noose sign. So we reached out. And what is it with these places that were once sane?
Right.
Like Mount Vernon? Like, because the school fight, that was Burlington, right?
Right.
The fight were...
But all Skagit County.
The beating, right. Where the two girls were beating another girl senseless because they thought she supported ICE and Donald Trump. Which, by the way, they've been kicked out of school, right? We need to do an update on that and see where it's at. Yes. I think they might have been removed from school. But that happened in Burlington, which is right across from Mount Vernon. And this is like a beautiful... And I'm sure it is. I mean, I drive through there not infrequently. But there is some real bizarre elements infiltrating that one sleepy community.
It's got a pretty significant Hispanic population, and it's obvious that they're being catered to some extent.
Right. Yeah. So they are after school today. You better check with your kid if they go to Mount Vernon High School to see if they're going to be participating in a protest sign making contest with Skagit Indivisible and the Democratic Party. Just wild.
And it's a reminder, too, that if you don't think they're getting to your kids first, you better scoop them up.
You know, everybody, I think, wants their kids to come into their own and figure out who they're going to be as an adult and all of this. But do you want to help guide them, or do you want random
bribing
teachers
them.
To bribe them?
Bribing them.
It's, they always do that. They bribe them to go to that LGBTQ club, the Pizza Clatch. Right. It's free pizza.
Free pizza. It's come and learn how cool it is to be trans. I think that it's a... Yeah, it's bribing them and teaching your kids to identify when they're being manipulated. Mm-hmm. So even if you don't want to talk to them about all of the specifics of politics and ICE and all this, at least teach them how to identify when they're being manipulated, because that's what's happening in all of these cases.
Well, and then some of the best advice we've got from parents is, you know, have your kids be able to identify that, but then come back and tell you, like, hey, I wanted to let you know this happened at school today. Mm-hmm. And that's how we get so many of these tips of things going on, is a kid brings home an assignment, like, hey, I got this at school today, and gives it to their parent because they know they're looking out for these things. Or, hey, this is in my reading assignment. They're looking out for these things, and they know what seems off, right? Right. All right, Nicole, thank you. Mm-hmm. We'll have you probably come back at the end of our second dose of Unbelievable. This is unbelievable in a good way. Positive. Boop. So last week on Unbelievable, we broke news of this crazy art display in an art class at Puyallup High School. Again, another place that's mostly sane and these things are happening. And it shows a bunch of different depictions of President Trump. Yeah, we've done a lot of stories at the Puyallup School District where it's got him as a pig. It has him as a member of the KKK, as a creepy clown. There's like this mostly nude image of him. And I said at the time that it really seemed like this was probably, they were given some sort of assignment. And then all of their, you know, what they created was hung up as part of like a bigger mural, right? But there's like a thing that says assassination. You see it right above Trump. There's a picture of an, we can't make out what it says, but two nooses above Trump. I mean, it's really bizarre stuff. And to me, if I'm a conservative student or I have conservative parents, I mean, that creates a hostile environment in the classroom, right? So that picture went everywhere. I think libs of TikTok picked it up. And my understanding is the phones were ringing off the hook at Puyallup High School. And so they have done something about this. They sent us a very lengthy statement, which is good. You know, again, free speech, great, art, express yourself. But if you're creating a hostile environment or an uncomfortable learning environment for other kids, that's where it's gone too far. So they told us, we're aware of concerns regarding student artwork displayed in a high school art classroom that included imagery that depicted the president in a demeaning manner. We understand that some members of our community found the artwork offensive, and we take those concerns seriously. The artwork in question has been removed. Okay, good. When classroom displays disparage individuals or violate district policies, we take action to ensure our learning environments remain respectful and inclusive for all students, staff, and families. Student expression, including the exploration of current events and political topics, is an important part of learning, particularly in courses like visual arts. We are addressing this situation in alignment with district policy and professional expectations. We remain committed to supporting student creativity while ensuring our classrooms reflect respect for a wide range of perspectives. Right. And to that point, there's a line. Like, I'm, of course, kids are going to talk about current events. They're going to have projects related to current events. I have no issue with that in the world. You don't lose your First Amendment rights just because you step into a classroom. But I think reasonable people can agree that when you have something like that up in a classroom, it's a distraction. It's going to make some kids uncomfortable. It clearly did because it was sent to us, right? So they have now taken it down. But we have some lingering questions. We did follow up, correct, Nicole, with the Puyallup School District this morning.
Yes, we did. And that was part of my original question was...
Yeah. What was the assignment?
What encouraged this display? Right. And I think that statement, well, okay, they removed it. However, I still think they're saying, well, it's okay if you have a different opinion than some and whatever. Where I think that the issue is the violence and the kind of, well, definitely the violence, but the obnoxiousness of it. And what are you doing to encourage civil conversation with people that you disagree with? This is not civil. This is obnoxious and intrusive. And what are you doing to encourage a better response to situations like this?
So that's why it's important for us to understand what the assignment was. Because did an adult set them up to create something like this? Mm-hmm. Now, an example of maybe a positive assignment that wouldn't have been problematic is, hey, depict a political figure who you look up to. Because then you wouldn't have these, something like that. You wouldn't have these depictions that are like Trump as a pig and whatever it is and KKK.
And where's the other, I mean, show some balance, right? So if you're going to let them say these are the people that don't like Trump and disagree or whatever.
Yeah.
Where's the pro-Trump wall?
Yeah.
Because you're telling me not that every single student came up with the same negative depiction of Trump?
Yeah. And I don't know. And we can't see the whole mural on there, but obviously the individual who took this realized what it was, wanted us to see it, was uncomfortable right. by it. So it's just about common sense. Mm-hmm. Common sense. Never when I was growing up did anything like this ever come up. No. Never did we have protest sign making contests after school. Never did we have pictures of the president as a pig and nooses in the KKK. So much of this stuff that happens in school is such a departure. And I mean, I'm not young, but I really wasn't that long ago that I was in high school. I graduated in 2006. So we're talking about 20 years, and I get it. But look how much things have changed. Yeah. And I would say even 10 years ago, this kind of stuff was not happening. So let's just use common sense. Kids are in school to learn. Yes, they're going to talk about politics. Yes, they're going to talk about controversial things. But I think a teacher teed them up for this. And that's what we want to get to the bottom of. All right. Unbelievable. Really unbelievable. All right. We'll talk about what's happening at American airports coming up next. My nightmare. My absolute nightmare. First, if you're a small to mid-sized landlord in the state of Washington still, and you've hung through all the crazy stuff with the policies and the rent control and all of that, highly recommend becoming a member of the Rental Housing Association of Washington. Is Washington's trusted resource empowering housing providers. And that's really what they're all about, is empowering you to be your own advocate. They're out there advocating on your behalf down in Olympia. They have events all across the state, not just for landlords and housing providers, but people interested and impacted by housing policy. So you can reach out to RHA, rhawa.org, check out their resources, learn how to become a member, learn about some educational events that they have coming up and the advocacy that they're doing at RHA. rhawa.org, rhawa.org. It really is Washington's trusted resource empowering housing providers. All right. The TSA situation over the weekend. You took a ferry over the weekend. Nicole travels like literally every weekend. And that was a different situation.
Disastrous.
Yeah, we should talk about that in comments. Nicole had a horrible ferry experience, shocking, over the weekend. But if you were traveling, absolutely nightmare. These lines, there were like 4-hour long lines at some of these airports, like in New York, Atlanta, Houston were some of the worst ones. I mean, I saw this one where it was like stretching. So back, you know, from where it usually is, through baggage claim and out to the parking structures. Mm-hmm. I mean, I don't even know. At that point, just shut the airport down. But now the ICE has arrived to help. So, of course, this is because TSA, Democrats are blocking TSA funding. And, you know, so you have a lot of TSA agents who've just straight up quit or who are not coming to work. So it's led to these really long lines. So Trump's like, okay, well, if Democrats won't fund the TSA, we're sending ICE in, which I got to be honest, is such a brilliant thing to do. I love it so much how his mind works sometimes, because they hate ICE. But like, ICE is going to go in and do this very non-controversial job of helping make these lines shorter. And so it puts Democrats in this total predicament, which I think is hilarious. President Trump did say, though, one condition, the ICE agents who are arriving this morning, who have already been today at airports across the country, he said no masks. He said, I'm a big proponent of ICE wearing masks as they search for and are forced to deal with hardened criminals, many of whom were let into our country by sleepy Joe Biden and his wonderful border czar, Kamala. I would greatly appreciate, however, no masks when helping our country out of the Democrat-caused mess at the airports. Thank you, President Donald Trump. He further explained his decision to tell ICE agents who are going to the airport specifically no masks.
The people coming into the airport, typically speaking, aren't murderers, killers, drug dealers, etc. There may be a few of them, but there are many. They're people that want to come into the country, or that people want to leave the country, go into maybe their home country. So I didn't think it was an appropriate look for an airport. I think it's a very appropriate look when they're out on the street trying to find one of the 11,888 murderers that Sleepy Joe Biden led into our country.
Poor Sleepy Joe.
I love that he had that number sitting right there.
Yes, he was ready for it. Now, that being said, not a shock, the ICE agents are already being harassed. So there are already instances of ICE agents being harassed by people, recorded with cell phones. And that was the reason they were wearing masks in the field in the first place, is they didn't want their faces put out there for people to, you know, stalk them to their houses. And there's already protests. This is in Atlanta. They're having an ICE out protest against ICE at the domestic terminal in Atlanta, which is like, okay, do you want the lines to go down or not? Do you want the lines to be better or not? And that's why I think this is such a genius move from the president. Is like, Democrats won't fund TSA because they don't want to fund ICE, right? Even though ICE was already funded by the One Big Beautiful Bill. So they're already out there doing their jobs. And now they're coming to the airport. So I feel like Democrats really just need to relent at this point. I know that John Fetterman is encouraging them to do so. And even, I mean, Elon Musk offered to pay TSA agents who aren't getting paid during this funding gap. And I was doing the math. That's like $100 million a month. I mean, he can afford it, right? Yeah, and I don't know if he's going to do that or what the mechanism would even be. SeaTac Airport in Seattle, always virtue signaling. They made sure that you knew that they know that Trump wants to send ICE in and they're not going to stand for it. It says, we're aware of the latest news reports that ICE agents may be assigned to provide TSA functions at certain airports as of Sunday. Security times at SeaTac International Airport remain normal. So they said, we don't really have an issue here with these long lines other airports are seeing. They said SEA, in partnership with TSA and the airlines, already provide staffing for non-screening positions mentioned by the administration as possible jobs for immigration agents. SEA will continue to work with our TSA and airline partners to ensure the airport is prepared to provide a safe and efficient travel experience, and we remain deeply committed to providing a welcoming experience to all travelers, even the illegals. We value the dedication of TSA and all frontline staff working through a busy spring season without pay, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So, yeah, I mean, they're saying, and if the lines aren't bad there, which they haven't been, then there's no need for ICE agents to come in and to assist TSA. I do feel bad that the TSA agents are once again stuck in the middle of a political battle.
I do love that they're like, well, they're not trained to do this. Like, they're literally policing the lines. They're not right. They're not the ones looking for bombs on people. Right. They're not the ones, you know, giving pat downs. They're the ones that are just, you know, stay over here, go this way, yes. Whatever, giving the extra advice.
Right. And if you don't want ICE doing it, then maybe the National Guard can come in or whatever it is, but they can handle it and they can help people get from point A to point B a little bit better. And we should all welcome that, but of course not. People are unhinged. And that's why I say, just wait until the World Cup in Seattle, when the Department of Homeland Security, at one of the biggest events in the world, needs to be on the lookout for possible terror attacks and lone wolf attacks, and people are instead harassing them and spitting on them and taking videos of them because they see Department of Homeland Security or federal agent while they're down protecting the World Cup in Seattle. It's going to happen, and it's going to be just ridiculous. I asked you guys in our daily subscriber show poll on Patreon, Locals and X, if you support President Trump using ICE agents at airports to assist TSA for this period of time. Nicole, yes or no?
I will say I support the messaging here because in theory, they're probably getting paid a lot more than, you know, if you just ask somebody to come and keep an eye on the lines, because it's not really a high paying job necessarily, I'm sure. But, you know, I'm for motivating both parties to figure this out because this is getting ridiculous.
Well, yeah, that's why I say no, only because I'm like, no, Americans need to see what they're willing for the sake of, like, I don't want illegals deported. What the chaos that they're willing to thrust everyday Americans into. I just feel like you just let it happen. And I'm to what extent, you know, and I know that seems a little petty of me, but this is the consequence for virtue signaling. I mean, those lines were insane. You probably have people in there who are trying to get to weddings or funerals or God only knows what, job interviews, and you're ruining their lives. But most of you, 97%, say yes, you do support it. Sarah said, yes, I'm flying very soon, and I think I'd actually feel safer if ICE agents worked security rather than TSA agents. Who knows? They might even pick up someone they can deport. And probably not a lot of that, because I think you're probably not, if you're trying to come in illegally or something, probably not using the airport and booking a ticket or whatever it is.
Well, that's the thing, is that you have to have real ID to fly. So those people you're not getting on the plane illegally.
Yeah.
Because you have to have ID that you should also have to vote.
Right. Yes. let's see. Casey says, I support ICE anywhere to help keep us safer. HTA, they're only doing security, so they're probably better trained than the TSA agents. In some cases, I'm sure. It depends what individual tasks. Matthew says, it's not ideal, but if Dems don't care about travelers, then this is a way to deal with them. So yeah, a little bit of a disagreement, but I tend to just say no for the time being, maybe in a week. But I do think you got a lot of those people who elected the individuals who are blocking funding for TSA. So maybe we all experience a little bit of the pain for a couple days. And selfishly, I don't have any travel plans for about a month. So it's not
as long as it's dealt with in a few weeks.
Not the end of the world. As long as it's dealt with before I go to Cabo. All right. I just have to talk about this very briefly because this is the epitome of like the virtue signaling left in America. Do you see all these left-wing influencers that went to Cuba? So Cuba's had like a pretty, I mean, worse than usual situation. There have been rolling blackouts and all of this because the actions the U.S. took in Venezuela. And so these left-wing influencers, they went there, oh, in solidarity with the Cuban people, not against the Cuban government, which is what's really making their lives horrible, but in solidarity with the Cuban people and the Cuban government against America. Absolutely insane. Somebody called it, God, it was like a, oh, I wish I knew this phrase somebody used that was perfect. They called it like a suffering safari. Like a, literally like these well-to-do influencers from the United States going and taking pictures of like the Cuban people suffering on like a suffering safari. So the Communist Party officials held a this big conference for influencers. And there were some reports that at the time, the hotel the influencers were staying at and the place where the conference was held were like the only buildings in the area that power was being sent to. So they went there and caused the Cuban people to suffer more. And I saw this video of these two white women painting a mural of like waves and positive statements for the Cubans. Like, wow, that's really going to help them. A plus, these are people who get on rafts and flee to the United States in shark-infested water, but they'll love the mural that you made for them when they have no power and no food. Just the worst of us, the worst among us. All right, we'll get to comments coming up next. First, our friend Wes Jones is the guy you want to reach out to. If you're even starting to think about leaving the state and selling your home, reach out to Wes Jones to see what the market is like, what that process will look like. Our friend Preston, who's an undivided viewer and listener, said what he really appreciated about Wes and his team is they treated him like he was their only client.
He works out of East King County, so he deals with multimillion-dollar homes. My house is not anywhere near what he sells, but he made it feel like I was one of his biggest clients. I had some really stupid questions, I felt like, and ChatGPT couldn't answer them. So I felt like I was a moron reaching out to Evie sometimes, and she had a lot of grace with her answers. So just him, the way he puts you at ease, the way he treats you like the most important client, and just his whole staff, how helpful they are.
Isn't that a cute house, though? I like it was like mint green, and then the chicken coop was painted the same color as the house. That's adorable. That's super cute. But anyway, and he got offers for over listing price. And so Preston was just really happy with the service that Wes Jones and his team offered. So go from Sell With Wes to Sold With Wes. You can go on his website right now, sellwithwes.com, and see some of the listings that he's recently sold and what he's been able to achieve for clients. So sellwithwes.com, sellwithwes.com. I recommend starting by using his home value calculator right there on the website to see how much your home is worth. It might be worth more than you think, and then say, hey, Wes, I want a market analysis. Tell me what I can expect, how long it can take to sell it, etc. So sellwithwes.com. It really just is a better way to sell your home. Okay, let's get to some comments from the live stream, shall we, on our victory in the state court of appeals, which took a while. Man, the ruling
ridiculous
took a
how
while.
Speaking of taking too long, which yes, is but, what it was
hey,
about. But
I'm happy. I don't care how long it took, as long as it got to the right outcome. Christopher says, so what was in the records? Here's the interesting thing about this and why I think this was so egregious. So when we requested it, I requested his work email, his work, you know, because that's all you can request initially. Mm-hmm. Text messages from his cell phone, voicemails, phone calls, in and out numbers so I could figure it out. And what we realized with the first installment, which is a partial return, is that there was like virtually nothing there. So there was, you know, a couple like emails that came in from just the online form where people can give feedback to city council members. But in the first installment, he had sent no emails himself. We didn't get any phone calls, any text messages. And so I thought, well, that'll come in the second installment. Mm-hmm. That's probably the harder record to get. So the second installment comes after he's already lost the election. So it sort of becomes a moot point, right? And by the time we're able to go through it, we realize that there's nothing in these documents. He didn't text anyone. He didn't receive any text messages. He didn't send any emails during this critical 10-hour period where he has just thrown a wrench in this whole drug plan. He's not using his phone. He's not using his email. So had I known that earlier, what would I immediately do? Well, I would say, well, he's doing city business on his personal phone. Right. And I, in fact, had gotten a text message that someone said after I found this. I messaged someone and I said, I thought you talked to Andrew Lewis. And he's like, I did. And he sent me the message. And I said, what's the number on there? Turned out it was his personal cell. Mm-hmm. So now that would have led to the realization that he's hiding this by using his personal cell phone. But by the time that became clear, because of how long they delayed the records, he's out of office. I can no longer ask for his personal cell phone data because he's not a city employee anymore. So to me, I think that there was probably stuff that we will never know about, because there's no way during this 10 hours he's not getting texts from people. He's not making phone calls. So unfortunately, because they delayed it, you know, we won't know the extent of what influence he might have had. We did get some records, you know, going back and forth between city council members, talking about, you know, issues with the bill and all this stuff, but no sort of smoking gun for what caused him to change his mind in a 24-hour period of time. William said, the judge acknowledged Undivided as media. You should add this to your press pass battle. Yeah, well, we're called Undivided Media, so I think they had to refer to the name of our actual company. On Glenn Beck going scorched earth on Seattle and Bob Ferguson just being like, meh. Erica says, Brandy, you're giving Bob Ferguson too much credit for being smart. Well, look, you can be smart, but you can still act like an idiot.
Yeah, book smarts right. versus
yeah.
real smarts, mm-hmm. I guess, social smarts.
Yeah, let's see here. Guy's Keeper, if Detroit became the Rust Belt, Seattle would become the Mossy Wreck. Is that what they called Detroit?
I didn't know that.
I don't know what that's relating to.
Makes sense because it's like because of the automobile industry. Yeah.
Yes, we're just, it's going to be just empty everywhere here. On Ina Kwan's killer being found not guilty by reason of mental insanity, Y said, for certain crimes, I don't know if we should give that mental illness as a cop-out to murder. I'm sorry. More and more, I feel like these people should not be let off the hook. Well, I mean, I tend to agree. Like, you killed someone, even if you weren't insane, the punishment should be life anyway. You know what I mean?
Right. Like, can't that go into the sentencing aspect? So you're still guilty of murdering someone, but
right.
your punishment can be this because of the insanity.
Sure.
So I think that, yeah, leaving the window open for him to get out is what's very frustrating.
Well, and I think that's for Ina's family. Mm-hmm. Imagine that reality they're now going to be dealing with.
Yeah.
At any time, he could be released. And so, you know, at least if somebody's sentenced to time in prison, there's a little bit of finality. I know there's always the indeterminate sentencing review board. We've seen people petition for, you know,
they're sneaky though.
Reprieves from the governor. Yeah. So it's really tough. Lolly Wilson, victims and families get no justice. Yeah, I agree. On the high school hosting a protest sign making workshop with the Democrats today. Chuck says, my daily installment for sponsoring the Unbelievable segment to ensure we get the boop. Sorry, I missed Thursday's installment last week.
Oh,
Chuck sponsoring our Unbelievable. I did boop today, though. Mm-hmm. Doug, take activism out of public schools. I agree. It's yeah, and I don't want them making Trump signs after class with the Republican Party either. Host it somewhere else. Host it at someone's freaking house, weirdos. On Puyallup, taking down the anti-Trump art. Don says, the obsession with this man is just truly unbelievable. Chris, the artwork is now on its way to Mount Vernon for a contest Monday after school. They'll take that and they'll just add it to their signs.
Add it to the wall.
Right? Yeah, looking up for Jesus. Sure, they'll take it off the walls, but they're still hammering their BS into heads daily. Can I also say about Trump? I just was so annoyed with him over the weekend.
I know you are.
His response to the Mueller, I'm glad he's dead. Mr. President.
Unnecessary.
Have there been people who've died who I'm like, I'm glad they're dead? Yeah, of course. Right in here.
or to close friends, maybe.
Right,
not
in
the
here.
Country.
It's just, it bothers me because I know there are people who, like, that would never change my mind of whether to vote for him at this point. Like, I would still, if given Kamala,
right.
It's not like it changes my mind. I still like the president. I still like his policies. But I do know that there is a segment of Americans, it might be small, but that's all it takes to sway elections.
Sure.
Who that kind of stuff is enough to make them vote for another party, vote for other people. And that's what bothers me about it. It's just totally unnecessary.
Family.
What?
They have family. They have people going through stuff. Like, don't
no,
diss
right.
on the dead.
He's got kids. It's like, don't say, yes. as the president, you're glad he's dead. I mean, for the love of God.
He knows they're going to do it when he dies. He knows that well, yeah. there's going to be this reaction. I'm sure he doesn't love that for his children.
Right. And right. 100%. And they will. They'll say the most vicious stuff many years from now when President Trump,
There'll be parties in the streets.
And it'll be disgusting. It'll be absolutely disgusting. And then they'll justify it. Like, look what he said when people died, you know? Mm-hmm. So we can all, this is how societies just go to hell. This is the race to the bottom, people. I don't want to participate in it. Let's see. Trump sending ICE to help the TSA. Crafty Grandma Crispy, brilliant troll move putting ICE in for TSA. It is brilliant. It really is. Yep. It's ingenious. Let's see. A couple other super chats. Moon Goddess, Brandy and Nicole, I'm just supporting common sense. Thank you. Sonic the Bedhog. Oh, that is a great name. Sonic the Bedhog.
Yeah, I like it.
Wow, mm-hmm. I love that. That's my dog. Oh my gosh, Lucky, I'll just read this. It says, love the show, Penguins do, we appreciate it. My dog, Lucky's been in a cone and a lick sleeve for what, since the beginning of January at this point?
Poor dog.
I know, she's gone through two surgeries, it's just a disaster. But she still has to wear the cone, and she's got a big old cone at night. And she's like, right, so it's like me and Mike, and we have a king bed, but still, you know, we're full grown humans. And then it's Lucky. And I'm like literally on the edge of the bed like, my spine just folding in half so it can fit her cone in there. It's just like, I can't sleep at night anymore. But I won't kick her off because she loves it so much. Eric, don't ask Adam Smith. He will just blame Trump for the gas prices here in Washington. I'm going to do another segment on that tomorrow because it bothers the hell out of me.
Oh, it's infuriating it gives, like, we're trying to teach people here and they're just coming in and it's a louder message than we've been able to get across.
And then all the Democratic voters are just like, yeah, Trump, gas prices. Now you care about gas prices? Now you care? We could care about it all. We could care about it all. Care about Iran, care about the taxes, care about the CCA. But no, it's like, no, I only am mad about high gas prices when the other party did it. And it's just,
speaking of bad messaging, so this ferry situation that I dealt with over the weekend. Really quick.
Because you were going to Friday Harbor, right?
Friday Harbor wedding, for a wedding. Yeah. Which is the same thing. You and I, last time we took a ferry together, same thing happened. And it was to a wedding and the wedding party couldn't get there. And it was just a disaster of travel on the Friday before a Saturday wedding. Same thing happened. The same ferries were canceled. The same, and then they have a system where if your ferry's canceled, like we were on the 10:30. If our ferry's canceled, we automatically get in line for the 1:30. Well, then that bumps everybody on the 1:30 gets bumped, right? Mm-hmm. So then they either don't get a ferry or maybe get a ferry later. And it really caused quite the, you know, it was very stressful for the wedding party, obviously getting there. But I have to say, I still blame Bob because I had a little friend. I found a friend on the ferry. Tim Iman was there waiting for me. And I was like, Tim, you're the reason this is happening to us, right? Because Bob's out to get him, right? And Tim had to wait all day for the ferry
Bob
as well.
Bob knew Tim Iman.
Yep, I'm pretty the ferry. Convinced that's why. But it really is ridiculous because we actually had to, so when we finally did leave on the 1:30 ferry, we had to drop a part off at the ferry that broke down on the other side over by Lopez. And I'm like, wait, so they all morning, this ferry has been broken, just sitting over there waiting for the 1:30 to leave. Why didn't you put it on a different boat and get it over there?
That's literally like Fisherman Central. Yes. Give it to a fisherman on a boat and say, get this over to that ferry right now. They'll do it. That's the pace of government. That is how government mind works. I'd be like, no, hey, I know a guy, Johnny down the street. He's got a fishing boat. I'm going to have him take this out there. Nope. Crazy. Sorry.
It's crazy.
Sorry,
it was a whole ridiculous situation. Coming home was better.
Wild. All right. We'll get to our closing sanity check coming up next. First, so you got a couple more days left in March. What are we entering? The final week of March, which is just crazy. So our friends at Valentine Roofing, they still have this deal going on where if you get a new roof with them, you get an entire year of roof maintenance for free. So if you're already kind of on the cusp of needing a new roof, have them come out, have them inspected. If they can fix it, they will. They're not going to try to get you to replace your roof if it's just a portion of it or something. You know, you got some parts that have not handled the recent severe weather very well. But if you do need a new roof, I mean, locking that in now and getting that free year of roof maintenance, that's a great deal. So call our friends at Valentine Roofing, 206 Roofing, to schedule your free estimate. Just get it on the calendar, 206 Roofing. Make sure you tell them that you heard about them on Undivided. And also, All homeowners are concerned about having to replace a roof because it can be quite a big expense, but they have very flexible financing options with payments as low as $159 a month. And so a Valentine roof is a roof built around your budget. So take advantage of that free year of roof maintenance when you purchase a new roof. Call 206 Roofing. Tell them you heard about them right here on Undivided. And with that, let's get to our closing sanity check. a good one to laugh at to close the show. So the California State University Board of Trustees was having a meeting, and one of the university's professors, Dr. Jamie O'Quinn, stood up to testify and had some very interesting biological factoids to drop on the meeting.
The idea that I have to get up here and say that trans women are women and that's what I have to use my time to do is absurd. Shame on you. Shame on all of you. And shame on you for using lesbian politics as a front for your transphobia, because this lesbian has had plenty of girlfriends with penises.
Haven't we all? Haven't you all had plenty of girlfriends with penises?
Maybe pretty you're common. Not a lesbian.
Pretty common. Yeah, maybe. Maybe you're not a lesbian after all. Something tells me that means you're not a lesbian. That has been our closing sanity check. Delicious. That has been today's episode of Undivided. Thank you for being here. Thank you so much for your commitment to giving Common Sense a comeback, for your support of this show. A special thank you to the paid subscribers on Patreon, Locals, and X who make this show possible. We could not do it without you. If you'd like to become a subscriber, you can sign up right now. Go to undividedpod.com, undividedpod.com, and just click on the banner that says support the show. We'd love to have you. That's all I got. See you tomorrow, back here, same time, same place. Toodaloo.